This is the Faith Debate, a theological roundtable gab fest with the Mixmaster as the master of ceremonies and the notorious Triple B, the Big Bridge Builder. Can we build it? Yes, we can. The Faith Debate is a free-for-all forum.
Hoo-ah!
Where faith community leaders wrestle over the truth.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
In less than 30 minutes, learn more about what really matters than others learn in a month.
Ooh, how convenient.
Are you ready for a clash of ideas? Are you ready for the sound of freedom?
Let's get ready to rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah, yeah!
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, the Faith Debate Master of Ceremonies, Troy Skinner.
You got a moron.
And in this corner, weighing in as a pastor, teacher, and founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in the local community,
ooh, mama,
the notorious Big Bridge Builder, John Switzer.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Hey, we don't need much time to get warmed up here on the Faith Debate, let me tell you. We're online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. I'm Troy Skinner. The guy that just said, woo, is the notorious Big Bridge Builder, John Switzer. And we had a chance to try to build some bridges. With somebody that I feel like is in La La Land.
Okay? We tried.
And so
it was like a bridge to nowhere.
Yeah. So what you're hearing now is really a replacement show, and I think it's just as well. We tried to experiment. We've never done it before. We were trying to be guests on somebody else's podcast,
yeah,
and we were going to then use the audio from his podcast as audio for our show.
Yeah, why not?
You know, figure that out. We'd never done it before. We did it over a phone line, which I'm not a fan of, and you know, it changes the dynamic of the conversation quite a bit and makes it less interpersonal and all those sorts of things. As it turns out, the responsibility for recording it fell on the shoulders of the guy doing the podcast, and he forgot to press the record button or something, so none of the audio. We spent 2 hours.
Come on, it was the sovereignty of God.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, he spent 2 hours recording, and none of it was saved, and in hindsight, he might have done us a favor.
Yeah.
Because I think both of us got a little bit short. If you don't mind my saying so,
it was very difficult.
You got a little bit more snippy than I did.
I felt like I was dealing with...
So what was the point? Why did we get snippy? So in fairness, he's not here to defend himself, so I'm not going to use his name. But it's a movement.
Yeah.
It's going back 100 and some odd years ago, it began to catch some fire, and it really caught fire maybe 50 years ago, and they established the Flat Earth Society.
There it is.
And the Flat Earth Society actually was growing for several decades, and then it started to peter out. And going into the 90s, it was down to maybe 2,000-3,000 members of the entire society. And if you'd given it another 20 years, it would have been gone. And then their life preserver arrived, the Internet.
Internet.
And so now every conspiracy theorist in the world is...
Thomas Friedman wrote the book, The World is Flat. So, I mean, he anticipated it with the return of globalism and the Internet.
It's gotten to be such a big pop culture thing, if you're paying attention, that even people like Shaquille O'Neal are punking people now. Shaquille O'Neal sent out a tweet saying the Earth is flat. And people were like...
Just to get them all stirred
up. Yeah, and then people were like saying that Shaq was an idiot and stuff. And after enough hubbub went on,
yeah,
Shaq sent another tweet and said, I was just kidding, LOL. You know?
Hilarious.
So, but they're true believers.
But what was irritating to us...
Yeah.
To me...
Yeah, don't speak for me yet.
Yeah, what was irritating for me is not what he believed, but that in the context of the conversation, I think this is true... For me, most times when we've been on the show and I found myself like, whoa, you know, I got to push back and I got to push back firm. It's when the person that's talking with us wants to put certain boundaries on how we have the conversation that they don't submit to. So they want us to answer questions a certain way or to show a certain amount of, you know, respect and letting them finish or whatever, but they don't afford, you know, the same respect back to us.
Right.
So there's a number of times through the years that we came off the show afterwards and we're just like, man, alive. And oftentimes the very people that accuse us of being the most narrow-minded in every situation have been people who couldn't listen. They didn't know how to hear. And anyway, so that's what was where I think I lost my temper. Well, I don't know if I lost my temper, but I was firm.
Yeah, you got a little agitated.
Agitated, without a doubt.
And you were clear to let him know that he was playing by different rules. For example, it's normal conversation to stir conversation, to stir dialogue, to maybe ask an open-ended question, to use an analogy, to use a hypothetical. And so we would use a hypothetical. Well, let's just say, and he'd say, oh, but that's a hypothetical. But then 10 minutes later, he would use a hypothetical.
And his hypothetical
we're like, wait a minute.
Was so much more abstract.
correct.
Right. And it's like, okay, fine. Was. If you're going to use a hypothetical, okay, that's fine. But let us use one then, too.
And then he didn't want us to cut him off, you know, and he'd turn around and he would cut us off in significant ways.
Right.
And
well, in fairness to him,
yeah.
You know, the pastoral side.
We're as bad as he is. We're
yeah.
all.
Yeah. And in fairness to him, I'm sure he's used to being cut off all the time and being called an idiot. Right? And so his seriously, his defense mechanisms are going to be.
That was a backhanded comment.
Are going to be up.
Without a doubt.
Right? So
he believes that the earth is flat. How do you, you know, he's got to.
And we'll talk. And we'll talk about some of his central arguments that we had with him in just a second. But we can do that right now.
Yeah.
So one of his big things was, well, look around you. The Earth looks flat. So therefore, it's the burden of proof is on you to tell me that it's not. Because when I look around, I see a flat Earth. That was one of his main.
And we had an extensive conversation about whether or not when you're watching a ship sail over the horizon, whether it actually seems to drop behind the horizon, or if you had a telescope, would you find out that it had just gotten so small and it's still out there, but it's not behind the horizon?
Right.
We had this whole conversation, you know, there.
And then probably the centerpiece of his argument was he doesn't feel like he's spinning.
That was the centerpiece, which was a little bit hard for me.
And so in case you're wondering, well, why should he feel like he's spinning? Okay, think about it. The world is rotating on – if the world is round, the theory goes that the Earth is spinning on its – is rotating on its axis. So there's that element of spinning. Then there's the fact that it's hurtling through space around the solar system, around the sun.
Yeah.
Because you have a heliocentric model here. So there's that aspect of movement.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the galaxy itself is spinning at probably millions of miles an hour for
and
all
moving
we know.
And moving. The galaxy,
so
the
you're moving in at least three different directions at the same time.
Yeah.
And he feels like if that's true – I should feel it.
Yeah.
Totally ignoring the idea that the atmosphere would rotate with, that the that it's all about perspective and scale and size, and the fact that gravity is holding things in place and making things – we were hitting with all these things.
Yeah, and that part was particularly exasperating in the conversation, right? Because at that point, the response to him is that when you're on a very – like an airplane – hurtling through the sky at, you know, several hundred miles an hour, why is it that I can get up and walk back and forth and not feel like I'm moving 200,000, you know, 200 miles an hour?
Right.
You know, and so we had that discussion. Or, you know, turning when you're on a very large boat and the boat's turning, you know, do you feel like it's turning if you're not looking at the horizon? You know, that there's a, you know, a scale factor that comes into play that you don't feel it when it's a very large thing that you're on. And it was in that moment where he would tell us that somehow we were, I don't know, it was just exasperating. I don't even know that I could say that, like how he responded to
that. Yeah, well, I felt like we were able, again, we're going to feel this way because, you know, we have our opinions, he has his.
Yeah.
And by the way, this latest study I saw shows that if the study is to be believed, 6% of Americans believe the Earth is flat.
There's 6%.
Apparently it's 94% believe in a round Earth and 6%. And if you're one of those.
That's one out of every 20.
If you're somebody that approximately, yeah, right?
My goodness.
If somebody, because 5% would be 1 out of 20, right? So it's more than 1 out of 20, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like 1 out of 19 or something, out of 18 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to start looking at people funny when I walk through
now,
the mall.
Now, if you're somebody who engages in these dialogues and these debates online or with friends or whatever, don't be too harsh. I'm trying to speak in generalities. I do understand that there's actually a sub-debate about whether or not you should call the Earth round, even if you believe in a round Earth.
I mean, you realize that means that there's like potentially like 3,000 people in the city of Frederick itself – based on those averages, that believe the Earth is flat.
If that study is true. Now, I have a theory on that, but I'll get to that in just a second. So there's so many theories on the theories. But to finish the point on, some argue that you can't call it round because it's not perfectly round. You should call it a sphere. But a sphere is also understood by many to be perfectly, so you can call it more spheroid or circular. But a circle
doesn't
have mass.
Some of those people are dealing with those kinds.
They're getting bogged down in the semantics. And so don't beat me up. I understand those arguments exist, but I'm still talking in general terms about the Earth being round. So, you know, I'm a simple in that regard. I think what's going on is some guy shows up on the street at a mall or in a mall with one of those clipboards and asks you the questions.
Right.
And one of the questions is, do you think the world is the Earth is flat? I think a lot of people, for humorous reasons, say, Earth is flat. So I think the 6% is artificially high. I don't think that's a real number. It can't be. It can't be a real number.
It's hard for me to imagine. Though when you start talking about including in that number people that think it's fear word in other things, you know, that changes the number significantly. I mean, that could be like 50% of the 6% are those, which means it already knocks it down to 3%.
Right.
So, you know, when you get into the numbers, maybe it's just a total, you know, wash.
So I felt like he was saying that when I look around, I see a flat earth, and I could very easily come back and say, when I look around, I see evidence of a round earth. If I go up in a big tall skyscraper, yeah. I should be able to see to the ends of the earth if it's a clear sky.
Yeah.
And I can only see so far before things seem to disappear behind the horizon.
Right.
Or you talk about the boat disappearing over the horizon when it's, you know, going away from you on the water.
When you go up in an airplane that you can see farther than just being down.
Right.
You know, and that there's more to see.
And I haven't personally flown on the Concorde, but right. Back in the day, apparently the Concorde got up high enough that you could actually – with your eyes see the curvature of the earth from it was high enough that you could begin to see it with the naked eye.
Wow.
So how do you answer those people?
Yeah.
So then, so that was my probably my central argument back.
So the question that I have is how many people even care about us talking about this now? You know, like where's the tie-in?
At least 6%. But, yeah. But I do want to...
Which means of our audience, you know, that there's at least, you know, 60 people out there.
Oh, more than that.
We have a strange audience.
Yeah. So there is a potential faith biblical component to this, and I want to touch on that in a minute, but it wasn't a central part of our dialogue, which is why we're not talking about it right now a lot with our podcast friend.
Yeah, we were having a hard time even thinking, should we do it, because it's so science-oriented.
He originally wanted to come on this show,
yeah,
and then he would use the audio on his podcast. And I said, well, where's the faith piece? Like, what's the faith argument? This is a faith debate. This isn't a science debate or a pseudoscience debate or a conspiracy theory show.
Yeah.
This is, you know, we're trying to grapple with what does the Bible teach or what do different religious worldviews, how do they understand reality? So what's the religious component to this? And he really wasn't going there. He could have gone there, but he wasn't going there. I said, it's not for my show. So that's why I thought we could do it on his show and we maybe pick the pieces that we most faith debate-ish and put them on our show and do it that way.
Yeah.
But my central argument was, okay, let's say you're right.
Like, this is a guy.
How do you explain all these people saying that the satellites are up in the sky and that they went to the moon and they've taken pictures? And that's a huge conspiracy. It's an international conspiracy.
Right. And so the question is, in our day and age, and let's just say this about the gentleman that we were speaking with. He's somebody that, you know, I'd be okay with being a neighbor next to the guy, you know, being a coworker.
He's a nice guy. He's very witty.
I don't have the impression that this is a guy that's going to fly offhand, though. Those are famous last words anymore, you know, in our society, because everybody says that about every shooter that went crazy, you know, across the United States, said, oh, he was a great guy. So maybe we're just misperceiving it. You know, maybe this is...
Wow, he's a serial killer
now? The red flag. Yeah, so, but our sense is that he's not.
No,
you know,
I think he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
I think he's earnest. I think he's well-meaning. I even asked him at one point. Remember I asked him? I said, are you really a true believer?
Yeah.
Is this like maybe a joke you're
having
fun with?
Meaning he's just fooling around,
yeah. Or is this something maybe that you haven't settled on and you're playing devil's advocate and you're playing around the edges trying to determine what the reality is?
Yeah.
Or are you like rock solid, you're flat earther?
And he's sincere.
And he said, I'm flat earth.
And another tie-in that I think it's helpful for us to recognize about him is that when we talk about eschatology in the Bible and the study of the Bible and eschatology, he chooses to be in a place on eschatology that is a more extreme view about eschatology. And so I don't know if that, again, paints a picture, a portrait of an individual that likes to kind of go after
His view on how to understand eschatology is a big fancy word for the end times, a study of end times, the last days, last things, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure, but I'd be willing to bet that less than 6% of people hold his view
in the Christian world
on that question.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a Minority Report kind of guy.
He's inclined to push the edges to kind of see how far he can take
an
argument.
And sometimes there's truth to be found in that. Every once in a while, those crazy, wild-eyed conspiracy things maybe are true.
And it reminds me in Israel that if you've got 10 people on a team that are working together and everybody's in agreement, they'll appoint one guy to be the naysayer that will choose to disagree with everybody else, whether he disagrees with them or not. Which, and so there's value in having somebody, you know, in that space. And so that being the case, nevertheless, this is where he stood.
Now let's spend the last few moments we have on the show. We have maybe 5-8 minutes left, something like that, on the show. But to talk about the theological bit, we're both Christians.
Yeah,
we both would be assigned the label of evangelical, probably.
Right.
I'm not sure how comfortably either one of us wear that label anymore because it's changed meanings over the years.
Yeah.
But you know, we're Bible believing, Protestant oriented Christians, and so that's the point of view we're coming at this. So we're going to try to go to the Bible because that's what Protestant evangelicals do.
Totally.
And so what does the Bible have to say about this sort of stuff, and how does it inform our faith? And so those that want to tackle the flat earth versus round earth thing from a religious standpoint, particularly a lot of the really earnest Christians will say, look, if flat earth is true, that's proof positive that there's a supreme creator, an intelligent designer. Evolution cannot be true because there's no way that a flat earth would have randomly shown up. Kind of thing. And so it's proof that that the scientific mindset is wrong. And I say, well, it sounds good, except no, they would just say, chance randomly put a flat earth where it did. It doesn't change. It's all built on chance.
So it is true that this gentleman seemed to get to part of what led him in this direction was him trying to grapple with how could people be in such different places about creation versus evolution, right? And that massive, you know, gap between the two, that you could look at the same evidence and based on your presumptions, based on your preconceived conclusions, you know, what you bring to the discussion, you could end up seeing something different from the evidence, right? And this is pretty important to any discussion that you have with anybody these days, you know, whether it's Democrat and Republican, and why the two seem to both agree that the other person is an idiot, or, you know, questions of religion, you know, Muhammad, Buddha, you know, when we're trying to define reality, we see the same thing. All of these point to a similar truth that if you bring certain conclusions to the discussion ahead of time, presumptions to the discussion ahead of time, it affects what you see or how you see what you see. And that nobody can get away from that. Right, there's been a little bit of a sense that science would set us free from all of our false approaches to you know, like our mystical approaches or our magical approaches to viewing things the wrong way. But the reality is that science itself has become a grid through which you know, we would call it, you and I would call it, scientific naturalism, right? That it's a worldview. It's become something of a religion. And so that led this gentleman to kind of asking, okay, well, maybe more of science's conclusions are wrong. Maybe these flat earthers are right, that these scientists are approaching everything from the wrong way.
And if I understood him correctly, he was blaming the church for that because the church was backwards and thought the earth was flat, and then science came along and was trying to disprove these backwards, you know, church people.
Meaning that we got cowed into submission
Exactly. And so the church
Galileo and Copernicus. Yeah,
the church started to adopt late the idea of a round earth, giving into the pressure of those who weren't maybe biblical in their approach or whatever, and that we got off the rails 500 years ago.
Right.
Totally misses the idea that this is not my field of expertise, but I've done enough reading. I mean, I read too much probably. That there's an argument to be made that the ancients, at least a certain significant percentage of them, understood or believed the world to be round, going back to hundreds, maybe even 1,000, 2,000 years before Christ.
Right.
And so if it goes back at least that far, and then Aristotle, I think it's clear, believed in a round earth.
Yeah.
And in the church, even in the Middle Ages, Aquinas was a round earth guy.
Yeah.
So it's all throughout. Now, the argument that they would use is, well, yeah, but the earth talks about the you know, the four corners of the earth.
I mean, the Bible talks about the four corners of the earth.
What did I just say?
The earth talks about the four corners of the earth.
The four corners of the earth, or the sun rising and setting, meaning the sun is revolving around the earth as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, and that the earth is set on foundations, these kinds of things he's saying, leave space to think that maybe the earth is flat.
Right. However, we don't have the audio to prove it, but I asked him about that. I said, now, I don't believe that the Bible is making the case for a flat earth or a round earth.
Yeah.
I don't think the Bible is intending to teach us about the shape of our planet. It's not making that kind of a case.
Yeah.
Do you agree? And he said, yes. He agreed with me. So he's surrendering any sort of biblical argument at that point. The Bible's not making a case. So he's purely in this for
the science. But it's in his favor to do that, right? It's in his favor to keep it, you know, not coming from Scripture and to let it be something that's driven purely by science. Because if he's a guy that is standing against, you know, the juggernaut of scientific deception, you know, that's come down from thousands of years of deception, then, you know, he's got to make his case not from Scripture but from science.
Now, have you heard the theory that this whole revival of flat earthness is, and I'm not saying that our podcast friend is within this group, he might be an unwitting participant, this idea that people who are opposed to the Bible and opposed to Christianity have kind of thrown this hoax up to see how many gullible Christians will jump on board and try to argue from the Bible that, yes, the earth is flat.
So they're just trying to troll Christians.
And they're trying to make Christians look like a bunch of, you know, backwards, uneducated, ill-informed.
And so you ran into that, like, how much study did you do into this? Sorry that you had to do that. Which is interesting.
So you haven't heard that's what might be going on here. It's some sort
of... No, I mean, I just have to confess that I've spent very little time thinking about it.
Well, won't you be surprised?
I came to the discussion last week, you know, trying to say, okay, well, you know, let me see if I can even go there. And that's part of, I think, what was so exasperating is, you know, how do you even go there? How do you wade into... It's just...
Well, now, see, you're going to be really, really surprised when one day you get up high enough to see that the world is indeed flat.
Yeah.
Right?
I will be, you know. I'll be surprised.
And you're okay with that?
When it is flat, when I find out that it is flat.
Well, he's John Schweitzer. I'm Troy Skinner. This is The Faith Debate on 930 WFMD. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our podcast friend. He might stumble into this show because, you know, I interact with him on occasion, and he might see that I post this on Facebook or something, he'll see us talking about him. Know that we love you. I have a deep heartfelt concern for the path that you're on, to be honest. I think it's going to cut the legs out from under you eventually. And so hear my heart concern on that. And we're playful because it's a showbiz. We're doing a radio show and all that. Yeah. And so please don't take any offense, okay? Till next week. God bless.
That was stupid.
Was it?